And thank you to the Law Centre for asking me to speak here today. And particularly thank you to the many people in this room who are working on modern slavery, particularly Migrant Help and Women's Aid, who I've met with on a number of occasions, and the welcome I've had at the Women's Aid Centre and the response I've had. And I know that the victims and those who are suffering get the same welcome, and it's particularly to be commended. And thank you for being here and to the work that everybody is doing here. But also, can I thank the Law Centre for setting the bar so high, in fact, to its highest. They're saying today, this is about the eradication of modern slavery, nothing less. And this has to be the aim. Whilst this is difficult, challenging, and demanding, it has to be achieved. So I congratulate the Law Centre for setting the bar at its highest point. But at the same time, I actually stand here in shame, in real shame, that in 2015 there has to be the appointment of an independent anti-slavery commissioner. That is a reflection on society that over 200 years since this was made illegal and the Slave Trade Act was passed, we still have it here in our midst. And I will show you in my presentation how I see that and what I intend to do to help in the eradication of this across the United Kingdom, but also internationally and globally. But I think it was so eloquently put by Glenn Jordan in his presentation, how it actually manifests itself here in Northern Ireland and how history is being repeated at this very time when we are here talking about this issue of modern slavery. And what we see when we talk about modern slavery is situations like this. Only this week I was talking at the World Congress of the Fishing Industry, and much reference was made to this part of the world. But actually that map could be of Europe, with similar routes of trafficking people and people placed in slavery. And again, Glenn mentioned the fact that trafficking is one thing, but actually it's slavery that is the problem. It's actually the enslavement of people who are held against their will and turned into a commodity. And we would accept this perhaps somewhere in Southeast Asia, people in fishing boats. We would understand this, people being forced to work in situations with images like this, whether it's in construction, factories, domestic servitude, which we know is a particular problem, particularly when people have money and power. And of course, prostitution, perhaps, which we understand more than other areas of exploitation. But all these are happening here in the United Kingdom, and they are fueled by demand, they are fueled by an ignorance, and they are fueled by the fact that people are happy to buy and sell people as a commodity. It was very apt when I was speaking at the World Seafood Congress that I was able to say, you go out with your nets every day and you swoop up the fish and you bring those catch in, your commodity, and you sell it. And you sell it once. Wouldn't it be fantastic if you could sell it again and again and again? But your commodity is now a man, woman, or child. And you can sell it again and again and again. That actually resonated with their profession. And there were a lot of professionals in that room who realised it's an issue around the waters of the United Kingdom, but actually around the supply chain that it creates in people who may come from the Philippines, Indonesia, or wherever to work in that particular industry. And I know Andrew Wallace will speak this afternoon about the supply chain and how that should be managed, but actually that is one of the best issues and one of the most important issues in how we can address this globally. Glenn spoke about slave trade in the 17th and 18th century. And studies show that between that time, 200 years, there was between 10 and 15 million people in slavery, bought and sold that very commodity to do work, to supply the demand of tobacco, to supply the demand of spices, supply the demand of rubber. So that was the situation back then, 10 to 15 million people. Nowadays, how does it manifest itself? Internationally, it could be children in the brick kilns of India or Pakistan or Bangladesh. It could be children and women in the brothels of Thailand. It could be people in the labour camps of North Korea. But it also could be the seven-year-old held as a slave for 3 years in a North London wealthy residence, made to work for 3 years, cook, feed, her teeth rotting, not seen by anybody, but perhaps she was. She was seen when she was putting the rubbish out by the neighbours. But did they know what to do? After it was disclosed, they said it was very odd. The only time we saw this young girl was putting the rubbish out. We sometimes saw her in the garden, emptying buckets. But did anybody do anything? And in that same house was a shed with men living in the garden who were sent out to commit crimes. Romanians. Were these just foreign nationals who lived a strange life? No, they were being beaten, some of them raped as punishment. Or in the UK, people paid £2 a day to work in a factory, and when they objected, subject to violence. Or a gang found guilty of trafficking 50 women for sexual exploitation across the United Kingdom. But that 50 women represented perhaps 500 women. And of course, we've heard stories of the salads we buy. We've seen stories in cases that have occurred in Spain, but also in the east of England, and of course in your own fields of here in Northern Ireland and in the Republic of Ireland, because the criminals know no boundaries and they will go wherever the money takes them. And of course, the fishing industry, which I mentioned. And that's one thing where there is good collaboration, because there is a project being launched by Police Scotland on Garda Síochána, the PSNI, the Gang Masters Licensing, and a number of other agencies, including the Irish Navy and Customs and Excise, to see how to actually implement the new legislation of boarding vessels. When I spoke with On Garda Síochána, they said they do a lot of monitoring of vessels, but they've never considered about the people. When we speak to other agencies, when they board vessels about fishing quotas and other contraband, are they considering the people on board as well? So there's progress and there is a change. What are the drivers of this modern slavery of the current day? Well, there are a number of factors. But let's look at the population explosion. In the last 100 years, the population has increased at an incredible rate. We have people now on numbers that were never expected. So people can become cheap in certain parts of the world. And also, we have other reasons why people are vulnerable. They're displaced. We have more people displaced in the world now than ever in history. We have people who are displaced because of natural disasters. We have people who are displaced because of conflict. And again, as Glenn mentioned, we saw it so vividly only last week on our screens, what that causes. This is happening at the moment, and what is the world's response to it? So that's why one of the issues I've been dealing with very clearly, and has taken some of my time recently, is about the Sustainable Development Goals. And whilst I worked with the United Nations and ambassadors from across the world, and particularly with the Pontifical Academy of Social Science and the Pope himself, in order to make sure that the included in the Sustainable Development Goals was the term modern slavery. And I'm so pleased that on the 2nd of August, when the final version of the Sustainable Development Goals was launched at 8.7 of the targets, it includes modern slavery. That is an incredible change, because that means this is now in the next 15 years' international budgets, which will change the minds of governments. That's 193 countries across the world who have made a commitment to fight this issue. Of course we understand, when you're dealing with certain countries, will it be lip service? But the others will be able to watch them, guide them, and make them respond in a way that will deal with these issues, because we can't have development and sustainable development and other issues like conflict in separate policies. We have to be considering vulnerability and trafficking and modern slavery alongside development, not as separate policies. But this is the real issue. Let's look at modern slavery today, here in 2015. There's estimated to be 35 million people in the world in modern slavery. Just think back to what I said about slavery in the 17th and 18th century. Over 200 years, 10 to 15 million is the estimate. Currently, we're talking about 35 million. That shows how real this issue is. This shows how little is actually being done on what is one of the world's biggest issues at this current time. And this is driven by demand, it's driven by vulnerability, it's driven by the fact that we have so many natural disasters and so much crisis around conflict. And this actually reminds me of how much we all have to do. But when I come more locally, because we have to start looking at ourselves, the Home Office did some estimates of how many people there are in modern slavery at the current time. And they looked at it in the United Kingdom at being between 10,000 and 13,000, which is an absolutely horrendous number. Compare it against other crime. And I use the word crime. Sometimes people say, well, it's not a crime, or it's a wider issue. This is a crime because there's a person. Someone's life is stolen. And unless you look at the crime part of it, we would never try and resolve other crimes, child sexual exploitation. We would never try to resolve other issues like rape without looking at who is doing it. Yes, it's much bigger. Yes, there's lots more to consider. But who is doing it here in Northern Ireland? Who is making it happen? There's one place they deserve to be, and that's in a prison cell. Then if we look at how many of those are known to the authorities, the National Strategic Assessment by the National Crime Agency identified 2,744 in actually 2014. So that is a 1 in 5 chance at best of being identified and supported. But then looks how many were referred to the national referral mechanism, and not all of these were successful. 2,340. So the number's going down quite significantly, I'd say. And then how many of those were prosecuted? 187. And how many were convicted? 130. So you've got a 1% chance, if you start at that 13,000 number, of justice. And whilst I know one person will traffic, or one gang will traffic more than one person, actually, no matter how you look at that, it's appalling. If any of you here were in business and you had a 99% chance of success of making a lot of money, you would take that business. Criminals are in a business. They've got a 99% chance of success. This is a global crime that needs to be addressed properly across the world, but we need to start with our own back garden. And what's the driver of this? Only last week, I went to a support centre and again met incredible people like those I meet at Migrant Help and Women's Aid, who are working to support victims. They introduced me to a young man, and he told me his story of how he ended up in the United Kingdom. And then he told me of what he had experienced, who he had met, the passport factory that's operating somewhere else out in Eastern Europe, the connection to gun running, the drugs, then what's happening in the UK, running car washes, the group being from outside of Europe, but they've all got passports to move around. And I said to him, have you seen a police officer or someone from law enforcement? And he said, no. So how can that be right? All that information that he's got, whilst we're spending time looking for data, get his information and work backwards, and you will break that whole network down. You will have an impact that will go across Europe. So when we look at those figures that I've mentioned earlier, I then looked at crime reporting. And when I looked at crime reporting, I looked at some specific areas of the United Kingdom, and I found in one area 100% failure on crime reporting that went into the national referral mechanism. So of a whole area where every single crime had been referred in was sitting in agencies, nothing had been investigated. Yes, the victim was being looked after, and that's absolutely right. And that's what people like Migrant Help, Women's Aid, and others, Salvation Army, and many, many who are in the room, Andrew himself, they do wonderful work. But that needs to be fed back into a more strategic approach, because we are letting people get away with this. And actually, these people want justice at some point. Many of them do. Look at the approach we now have to domestic violence, the approach we have to rape. And I think as well, when I look at Justice Goddard, the inquiry about child sexual exploitation, she opens up saying in the opening pages, this is all down to a lack of recording, misrecording, lack of response. And I think we're living it now with this very issue. There needs to be a real change and an understanding of what's going to work and everybody working together. So one of those things is, I'm sorry that I've got the England and Wales reference there, and Julie so eloquently explained Northern Ireland. Yesterday I was in Scotland talking to the ministers about the new legislation there. But there are things through it which are very similar, with some nuances for each region. But what is continually the same is the passion and the drive of everybody to make a difference. But one of the things I will talk about, and I won't go on, is the issues that I'm looking at and how I'm addressing them to make sure these acts and the response is adequate. And I'm creating priorities, which will be part of my strategic plan, which will be released fairly soon, hopefully in October. My priority is always going to be victim care, for the very reason that I mentioned, that if you don't support the victim, you're never going to get the information. It was brought to my attention last week about how can we use HMRC data. And I said to that person, okay, let's look at HMRC data. What will it tell me? Well, I'd never really thought about that. But if that story and that account had been given by the man I met at the victim centre had put into HMRC data, it would have opened up a lot, because things have to be focused. I've been working with banks and they've been showing me how transfers of money happen. But unless you know what it is, it could be drugs money. It could be somebody who's just inherited a large sum. It could be all sorts of things. But unless you've got the platform on which to set that data and to look at it, you'll be stabbing in the dark. So victim care is a priority for their welfare, but also to feed the intelligence picture and to prevent further crimes and to identify other victims. Effective training and victim identification. Sometimes it's been a case in modern slavery that we've had a plumber training an electrician, and we know what happens then. So we need people who understand the business doing the training. Law enforcement needs to be trained how to do their role. They need to understand how to investigate. They need to understand how to apply for joint investigation teams. They need to understand how to work with police forces in Africa, which is very, very difficult, but they need to be able to do it. It's done in other areas of business. It's done in counter-terrorism. It needs to apply to this crime. Productive partnerships. Many people in this room who I've worked with over the years, many people who I'm developing new partnerships with, but these partnerships need to be productive. What are they doing to actually address the issues of modern slavery? We cannot judge a partnership on how often it meets and how many people attend. It has to be on how many victims are identified, how many people are supported, how many people does it give justice to, how many people get compensation, some through the new legislation, some through criminal injuries, how many people end up being free people, going back into work, going back into education. I'm working with a university which is going to open up jobs within the university where they have 1,200 jobs. But they're also going to give training. And I would love to see a situation where a traffic victim or victim of modern slavery is a lecturer there one day. That's my aim. I want people to be free, strong, making the policy decisions of the future. This isn't about me making policy decisions. This is about freeing people, but actually bringing justice. Making those people committing these crimes terrified, making the victims of modern slavery stand tall. Until we get that, and as Glenn says, that's when we'll start to get the eradication, which we need to do. Evaluation of law enforcement, essential. I've shown you figures. I've told you about crime reporting. There are some very dedicated police officers. I was a police officer myself. I know there's people who now work in the NGO world who are ex-police officers. They are very dedicated individuals, but they need to be supported with strategies, resources, and assets that reflect this crime. Not an ad hoc basis attached to something else. This is serious organised crime that needs a serious and organised response. Private sector engagement. I'm working with many very big companies, and Andrew's going to talk about supply chain transparency. But one of the things I'm very keen to do is the transparency needs to be operated between the big companies in the way they have to do their accounts for HMRC. But that will only be a process. And that will sit with some of the biggest auditing accountancy firms that operate. And for example, one company alone, one of those big companies who has put information out to their customers already, represents 95% of the companies that will come under the 12,000 companies under the supply chain clause of the 36 million. Yet they know all they can do is build in structures. So I look at them as the watchdog. So when someone climbs the wall, they bark. But who will the bloodhounds be? The bloodhounds will be the NGOs. So when there is something where a big company say, we're supplying from Bangladesh, or we're supplying from Yorkshire, or we're supplying from Newry, that can be looked at and can be in a process to make sure that there isn't exploitation, because there's processes and procedures. But who's going to actually go in and say, we've caught you out? That's going to be civil society and the NGO world, and they will be the experts on that. So I have got a vision of that, and I am working with some of the biggest companies in the United Kingdom, including here in Northern Ireland, to see how we can be successful on that. And also international collaboration. I've been to Nigeria, I've been to a number of countries, and my plan is that we need to work internationally to stop this, because until we stop it and come up with sustainable developments, educate there. Some work I'm doing in Vietnam, which is developing, we don't know enough about what's happening there. How can we work with those countries? How can we accept we're at fault and convince them they're at fault and work together, using that influence as well of the United Nations? So international collaboration is important and will play a particular part of my strategic plan. So I'm going to close now, and I raise William Wilberforce very often, which goes back to what Glenn said earlier. And in the face of adversity, this man back in the 18th century and 19th century was campaigning for modern slavery, or for slavery as it was then, to be made illegal. And people were saying to him, well, you know, we make a lot of money at this. We've got big business. And as we've heard, even the slave masters, when it was emancipation went through, they got compensation for losing their slaves. But William Wilberforce says, you may choose to look the other way, but you can never say that you did not know. Well, people can choose to look the other way now, but with the Modern Slavery Act and the acts across the other administrations, I think it's going to be very difficult to look the other way, because I'm sure you'll be the watchdogs and the bloodhounds along with me to make sure they don't. But you can never say that you did not know. Well, that applies now. But also, my role as the Anti-Slavery Commissioner, I think, very much deals with that. Because one thing I will do, particularly those who have a statutory responsibility, if they choose to look the other way, I will most certainly bring them to account to make sure they do what they need to do exactly as Glenn said, to eradicate this crime from the face of Northern Ireland, but also globally. And I hope all of you will join me in that ambition. Thank you very much.